Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day, back in 1961, that Bob Dylan made his Carnegie Hall debut in New York City. How many people attended this NYC debut? Was it A, just 50? Was it B, almost 250? Was it C, well over 500? Dylan's Carnegie Hall debut, how many were in the audience anyway? And question number two, how did American singer-songwriter Tom Waits notably define a gentleman? Is it A gentleman is someone who can play the accordion but doesn't? Is it B, a gentleman is a man with a full beard who is comfortable with flowers? Is it C, a gentleman never has to say, I'm sorry? Or is it D, a gentleman is a woman's best friend? So how did this gravelly-voiced singer and actor from the latter part of the 20th century define a gentleman? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of November the 3rd. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1960, that Johnny Horton was killed in an auto accident in Milano, Texas, at the age of 33. He had the hit, Battle of New Orleans, 1960. He died today. And it was 32 years ago today, 1991, that Bobby Blue Bland, Booker T and the MGs, Jimi Hendrix, Johnny Cash, the Isley Brothers, the Yardbirds, and Sam and Dave were elected to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That was 1991 today. So, today's program opens with a tribute to Egyptian music that was inspired by Yasmin Fekri, who recently led a small group of U.S. travelers that included Marlo, Vivian, Chris, Cindy, Marianne, Donna, Michael, and Nancy, up the Nile River. I was intrigued by the evidence of musical instruments and singers on the walls of some of the ancient Egyptian temples, including the Philae Temple complex dating back to the 6th century B.C. Drums, flutes, cymbals, and harps were some of the more commonly seen instruments. Swiss harpist Andreas Wollenweider provides an introduction to this Quora.com article about Egyptian music. Ancient Egyptians loved music and dancing. They had used many musical instruments like percussion instruments, drums, the sistrum, rattles, tambourines, and later bells and cymbals. stringed instruments, lyres, harps, and the lute, which came from Mesopotamia, and wind instruments like the shepherd's pipe, double pipe, clarinet, flute, oboe, and trumpet. The so-called sistrum, or rattle, was actually an abacus, used by Isis to keep count of the weighing and the balance. According to the Book of the Dead and related literature, the heart of the dead pharaoh was ritually prepared and weighed in the balance by Thoth and Isis, the mistress of the temple. The ancient lira, by the way, this is where we get words like lyric and lyrical, was usually made with a sounding box made from a turtle or land tortoise shell. The seagoing activities of commerce and fishing made the sea turtle very common and was likely most used. Other instruments like the sistrum, which usually had metal, coins, discs, or plates strung on wires between loops attached to a handle, which was usually shaped like a popular god of the time. The sistrum is more closely related to the tambourine, which is really an ancient style of small handheld drum with metal discs attached. Flutes and the like were sometimes associated with snakes. One has to keep in mind that the Egyptian era lasted for thousands of years and many opportunities for the invention of and improvement of new musical instruments was to be expected. Drums of many kind were common, probably having origins in an even older tribal Africa. The Egyptian culture was multi-ethnic, its members having come from many surrounding lands, each bringing their knowledge and experience with them, even when some were conquered lands. The Society of Overseas Research adds that musical instruments were notably depicted in the Temple of Philae. Idiophones are instruments whose entire body vibrates, such as clappers, sistra, rattles, bells, cymbals. Rattles were used since earliest times. Clappers were made of wood, bone, or ivory, and often have the shape of human hands. The Egyptians associated the deities Hathor, Isis, and Osiris with music. Ritual temple music was largely a matter of the rattling of the sistrum, accompanied by voice, sometimes with harp and or percussion. Party or festival scenes show ensembles of instruments, lyres, lutes, double and single reed flutes, clappers, drums, and the presence or absence of singers in a variety of situations. Evidence of musical instruments in ancient Egypt. And from the capital city of Raleigh, North Carolina, we have Wilco's Capital City introducing our country music news.
City skyline photo, skyscrapers shine the sun so low in the sky. Secretaries at the hot top vendors, cabs honk at the bicycle messengers, rolling by.
Wilco, make the change we need. That's the title of the article in Rolling Stone, October 2023, issued by Will Hermes. Jeff Tweedy writes so well about his own music making, there sometimes seems little worth adding. See his best-selling books, World Within a Song, which is due out in November. But outside perspective can be useful, as Wilco's new album, Cousin, proves. It's the first Wilco set since 2007 to use an outside producer, and it shows in the best possible way. The producer is Welsh singer-songwriter Kate LeBon, who clicked with the band at a recent festival in Massachusetts. She does weird well because her oddball pop always feels rooted in the heart. Tweedy's a plain-spoken dude whose avant-garde streak has occasionally come off more aspirational than constitutional. So LeBon and Tweedy are a good match. And maybe because we're all swimming in strangeness lately, even this new album's more abstract fusions feel utterly natural. LeBon's touch is understated. Given her 2019 cover of Wilco's Company in My Back, one might wish her vocals were more prominent here, but her musicianship shadows the curveball melodies and clipped watchmaker beats scattered throughout Cousin. A fairly sharp pivot from the flashback country rock Americana of last year's excellent Cruel Country, more often conjuring Anglo post-punk and old-school prog rock. The song, A Bowl in a Pudding, is a dubby Nick Drake fever dream. Pittsburgh suggests the incredible string band tripping in a steel mule. But part of Wilco's magic is their mutability. They can be anything, LeBond notes, and it always cleaves artfully to Tweedy's narrative voice, one of the most companionable in modern song, even when he's channeling flawed characters, which he frequently is. 10 Dead adds his voice to a haunting recent run of mass shooting meditations, and the album's closing song, Meant to Be, is a feint that suggests a triumphal love song until you sense the singer's earnestness might be one-sided. When he sings the words, I still believe you're the only one, near the end, the key word hangs like the believe sign above Ted Lasso's locker room doorway. It's no assurance of anything, but it's a force, like Wilco's entire oeuvre, really, to keep us hopeful. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, Schools Should Offer at Least 1 Hour of Music Per Week. This is written by Sophia Alexandra Hall in ClassicFM.com on the 27th of June, 2022. The refreshed National Plan for Music Education sets out the government's ambition to level up musical opportunities for all children, regardless of circumstance, needs, or geography. The UK government's Department for Education has published its new National Plan for Music Education in England, postponed by 2 years due to the coronavirus pandemic. The plan has been made in consultation with music teachers, young people in music education, and beyond, over 5,000 of whom responded to the government's call for evidence to inform proposals for a refreshed national plan. When the responses were published in 2021, the Incorporated Society of Musicians, ISM, and the findings made for absorbing reading in the new 88-page The Power of Music to Change Lives. New investments have been announced to help champion music education. £25 million in new funding will be made available to help schools purchase musical instruments and equipment. This includes adapted instruments for pupils with special educational needs and disabilities. Schools will be asked to offer at least 1 hour of music curriculum a week, and outside of school time, a commitment of a further £79 million has been made by the plan every year until 2025 for the Music Hubs program. Since its publication on Saturday, 25 June, many national music organizations have come forward to share their positive first thoughts on the highly anticipated plan. ISM's chief executive, Deborah Annette, said, "The refreshed national plan has been years in the works, and we're glad that it has been released today. The ISM will take time to review the document forensically and listen to the views of teachers. However, on first reading, there looks to be much we can welcome and that our members will be pleased to see included within it." The new plan's first goal is for all children and young people to receive a high-quality music education in their early years and in schools. Secondly, the plan wants all music educators to work in partnership with children and young people's needs and interests at their heart. Thirdly, it states that all children and young people with musical instruments and talents should have the opportunity to progress, including professionally. Accessibility and inclusion are notably at the center of this plan in what some are calling more holistically focused promises than the plan's predecessor, a 55-page document titled The Importance of Music, which was published in 2011 as the first ever national plan for music education. Chris Cobb, chief executive of ABRSM, Classic FM's partner in music education, said the new plan clearly recognizes the challenges and opportunities facing music education. While reflecting trends and priorities that everyone in the sector knows to be important, it's encouraging to see a real commitment to inclusion, progression, and sustainability from early years to higher education, something that chimes with our own ambition to enable more people to experience the joy of music by getting involved and finding a personal pathway to making progress. Among the accessible resources within the plan is, quote-unquote, Classroom 200, a free online resource for school teachers working with students up to the age of 14 worldwide. Based on the model music curriculum, which was published by the Department for Education last year, which the refresh plan builds on, Classroom 200 features 200 recordings of music in a range of styles, each with its own accompanying lesson plan. The music ranges from Berlioz to Bob Marley and Rudder to Rag and Bone Man. Article skips down, ends with this. Music is a national asset that contributes billions to the economy, improves our health and well-being, and boosts our global reputation. And that all relies on a strong talent pipeline. A thorough musical education also brings huge benefits to children, whatever they go into do in later life, and it is our national interest to have a musically literate society. The Musicians Union cautiously welcomed the plan, with national organizer Chris Walters saying the plan shows that ministers understand what a high-quality music education for all children and young people could look like. However, Walters added, the plan is only the beginning, and we will be watching closely as its key initiatives are developed and rolled out. Ultimately, the proof is in the value will be in outcomes for children and young people, and it is vital that these are monitored effectively. Rolling Stones' Honky Tonk Women introduces our rock and pop music. It's an article titled, The Rolling Stones, Now. 2 decades and one tragic death since their last LP of originals, the band finally brings out a new album. This is written by Corey Groh in Rolling Stone magazine, October 2023 issue. Last year, Mick Jagger started feeling restless. 17 years had passed since the Rolling Stones had released an album of original material, and though they toured regularly and made the difficult choice to soldier on after the devastating 2021 death of drummer Charlie Watts, the on-and-off sessions they'd had for a potential new LP over the past decade hadn't produced much they could use. When the Stones' tour ended in Berlin last year, Jagger decided he'd had enough, so he pulled Keith Richards aside. I told Keith, I think some of the tracks are good, but most of them are not as good as they should be, Jagger says. I think we should give ourselves a deadline to finish recording, and then we should go out and tour the album. And then he looked at me, and he said, yeah, okay, that sounds like what we used to do. Jagger suggested a deadline of Valentine's Day 2023, a date Richard said was a bit optimistic. The sense of urgency, however, made the difference. The album, titled Hackney Diamonds, was due out this October 20. It spans the many styles the Stones have mastered in their six decades, hard rockers, disco rockers, and country hunks. They included two tracks that they recorded with Watts before his death. The record's guest list reads like Popular Music's Hall of Presidents: Paul McCartney, Stevie Wonder, Elton John, Lady Gaga, and even self-exiled Stones bassist Bill Wyman. The album ends with only Jagger and Richards doing Muddy Waters' Rolling Stone, the blues staple that inspired the band's name. Somehow, in their 61 years, they had never recorded it. The article skips down, ends with this. So what does the album say about the band that previous albums haven't? This album is the Stones, but now, Jagger says. Sometimes when Richards thinks about his age, he questions everything. What am I doing? I'm 80 years old and playing rock and roll, he says. But these moments are fleeting. Usually I don't think about age or anything at all, he says joyfully. At the end of the day, Richard knows why the Rolling Stones still play rock and roll. Who else can do it? When asked what keeps them going. If the Stones can't do it, nobody else can. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in 1961 that Bob Dylan made his Carnegie Hall debut in New York City. How many people were in the audience? Was it A, just 50? Was it B, almost 200? Or C, almost about 350? Or D, over 500? Correct answer. Answer A, just 50 people paid the $2 ticket price for attending Dylan's Carnegie debut in New York City. As noted in a 2011 CarnegieHall.org article, this was the 20-year-old Dylan's first New York concert beyond the Greenwich Village coffeehouse scene. When the booking was made, it was recorded in the booking ledger only as, quote-unquote, folk concert, along with the name of the promoter, Izzy Young. The Carnegie Chapter Hall booking fee for one of the most auspicious Carnegie Hall debuts of the 1960s was $60. All tickets were priced at $2. Although Dylan later became synonymous with the never-ending tour, he played only five more concerts at the hall. The final pair took place on the same day, January 20th, 1968. And the answer to our second question, how did American singer-songwriter Tom Waits notably define a gentleman? Was it A, a gentleman is someone who can play the accordion but doesn't? Was it B, a gentleman is a man with a full beard who is comfortable with flowers? Was it C, a gentleman never has to say, I'm sorry? Or was it D, a gentleman is a woman's best friend? Correct answer. Answer A, a gentleman is someone who can play the accordion but doesn't. As noted by the editors of Encyclopedia Britannica, Tom Waits is an American singer-songwriter and actor whose gritty, sometimes romantic depictions of the lives of the urban underclass won him a loyal, if limited, following and the admiration of critics and prominent musicians who performed and recorded his songs. Waits was born into a middle-class California family, but enamored of the bohemian lifestyle depicted in beat literature, Waits lived in his car and in seedy Los Angeles hotels as he embarked on his career. His raspy vocals, delivered in his signature growl, evoked the late-night atmosphere of the smoky clubs in which he first performed in the late 1960s. Drawing on jazz, blues, pop, and avant-garde rock music, he combined offbeat orchestrations with his own piano and guitar playing and stream-of-consciousness lyrics that reflected the influence of writers Jack Kerouac and Charles Bukowski. Although Waits' albums found considerable commercial success in Britain beginning in the mid-1980s, even his best-selling albums failed to crack the American top 40. His songs, however, have been recorded by the Eagles, Bruce Springsteen, and Rod Stewart. He also scored films and co-wrote stage musicals. Waits won Grammy Awards in the 1990s, Best Alternative Music Album, and Best Contemporary Folk Album. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2011. The theatrical posturing of Waits' live performances led in the 1980s to an alternative career as a film actor. His saturnine features and gravelly voice perfectly suited him to Mephistophelian roles, and he deployed these attributes to memorable effect as one of the people in charge of Purgatory in Wrist Cutters, A Love Story, 2006, and as the devil himself in The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, 2009. Waits later appeared in The Old Man and the Gun, about a real-life group of bank robbers known as the Over the Hill Gang, and The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, both 2018, the Coen Brothers' Ode to the Old West. So, with Halloween behind us and Thanksgiving starting to come up, let's close out today's program with some Turkey in the Straw by who else? Liberace.
The Turkey in the Straw, complete with variations and all the trimmings.
For today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time. And happy upcoming Thanksgiving.